thanks for joining us. I am Hallie Castor-Jane. Today on the Hallie Castor-Jane Show, Talk Radio for Fine Minds, a conversation with a man whose name you might not readily recognize, but whose portrayal of Homeland's Abu Nazir, the enigmatic Al-Qaeda overlord, is a performance no one will soon forget. His name, Naveed Negibon. You'll hear my conversation with Mr. Negibon in a moment, but first a word from one of our sponsors.
Is someone you love living with frequent pain? Are they spending more time just sitting in a chair or lying in bed or going to the ER more often? Other than taking them to the doctor, you may not know what else to do. Treasure Coast Hospice can help in more ways than you may realize. Even if you don't think your loved one is ready for hospice care, their experts can evaluate your loved one's condition and direct you to the right resources in our community. Call Treasure Coast Hospice to learn more or visit tchospice.org.
Critically acclaimed 2013 Screen Actor Guild Award nominated actor Naveed Negibon starred on the Emmy and Golden Globe Award-winning drama Homeland as Abu Nazir, the enigmatic Al-Qaeda overlord whose intrigues propelled the tense storyline through the first two seasons of the hit Showtime series. Here's what Hollywood Reporter writer Showtime's Stacey Wilson wrote about Mr. Negibon's performance. As Homeland's resident terrorist Abu Nazir, Negibon reinvented the villain archetype to a chilling degree. He was at once elegant and psychotic, handsome and sadistic. Naveed Negibon, who is currently in Abu Dhabi filming a pilot, is on the show with us today. So, welcome to the Hallie Castor-Jane Show, Naveed Negibon. Nice to have you here.
Our pleasure. Thank you.
Actually, the pleasure is mine.
That was a beautiful introduction. Oh, my God. I'm saying, who is this guy? Let me get to know him.
Well, it's true, and you know it's true. And everybody, when I tell people that I was doing an interview with you, I have to tell you, all my girlfriends were saying, oh, God, that guy is so gorgeous. I can't even believe he played that role. It's just unbelievable. So there you go. So you have certainly wowed everyone.
God. I should call in every morning just to boost boost of confidence.
Actually, I could listen to you whistling into my ear with that gorgeous voice of yours. So let's get serious here. You wowed everyone with that amazing performance in Homeland. I mean, I think that people are going to be equally amazed by your fascinating life. I mean, let's start at the beginning. You're Iranian born. I don't know if a lot of people would know that. Tell us a little bit about where you were born and how you were raised in your early life before you left Iran.
Oh, well, I was born in Iran. I was born in Mashhad, which is a city kind of northeast of the country. And I left when I was 20, and I went to Turkey. From Turkey, I traveled to Bulgaria, from Bulgaria to Germany. And then in Germany, I went to join a theater company. I started working there, and I went to school there. And then I've done it.
I know that. I was going to say, but you were raised during the Iran Revolution and the Iran-Iraq War. Where are your parents now? Are they alive? Are they still there? Did they get out too?
My whole family, they were back home in Iran. And actually, my mom passed away right during the Golden Globe. And so it's just my dad. Yeah, she was supposed to be my date.
Oh, that's rough.
Yeah, that was okay. She was there. She was there in the spirit.
She was there in spirit.
Yeah.
And let me tell you this. So you speak four languages?
I speak Farsi, which is the language of Iran. Then I speak Dari, which is Afghani. And I speak German and English.
Unbelievable. So you're not only a great actor, you're a smart guy, huh?
Oh, thank you so much. And by the way, I just spoke Chinese. I just spoke Mandarin. I'm so excited about it. We went to Shanghai they were Homeland won the best foreign TV show at the Shanghai TV Festival. Yes. And they invited me to go over there. And when we went there, they said, okay, so what are your speeches? Give us your speeches, because we want to translate it. We want to make sure that there's a translator there. And I said, well, my speech is in Chinese. I said, what, do you speak Chinese? I said, no, but I will give my speech in Chinese. And everyone kind of looked at me and said, yeah, okay, he's dreaming. But when I was leaving Los Angeles, I talked to Joy Moore, who works at Anderson's PR. She's one of my PR people. And her dad translated what I wanted to say in Chinese. And then all the way to Shanghai, I was working with all the stewards and everybody who was on the plane who wasn't speaking Chinese. I would sit next to them and I said, okay, say it this way, say it that way. Let me hear you. Then I went to Shanghai, and my translator helped me, and she coached me on how to deliver everything. And I went up there. Oh, Holly, that was amazing. I said, that is the least that I can do. These people that have been watching this show, that have been admiring us, that they have shown us their hospitality, the least that I can do is just to go in and thank them in their own language. And
you have an ear for that, for language? What is that? Is that part of the acting ability to be able to go ahead and do language like that?
Well, I don't know. Maybe I can act. I can act that I can fake and that I can speak the language. I don't know.
They did appreciate it, I'll bet, didn't they, when you got up there and did it?
Oh, you should have seen the whole audience. The Chinese people, the people in Shanghai, they were very proper. They were sitting there, and even if they were applauding, it was very polite. And then when I went there, at first I say, Dajia Hao, which is hi to everybody. And then, okay, that was just a hello. And then I went through my speech in Chinese. And by the time that I finished my first sentence, the whole auditorium, they were roaring. It was beautiful.
And
that is
so cute.
Some of them came. They thanked us for showing them respect, respecting them, and speaking their language. And David Howard was with me. David gave the speech in English, so we covered both bases. And it went very well. They really loved the show there.
Oh, gosh, I love that. Well, everybody loves the show. I mean, how could you not love that show? I mean, that show is great. But I think it's interesting that you have that ear for that, and also the sensibility to want to do something like that for the Chinese people. How nice is that? Listen, in your bio, it says that the man who created one of the most memorable villains of a generation, which is true, Abu Nazir, you took a liking to acting at the age of 8 when you first provoked laughter from the large audience while he was on stage. Comedy?
I love
from comedy to killer, I love it.
I love to make people laugh. I mean, I think that brings joy to life. You look at the people, when you smile, the world is like a mirror. You smile, it will smile back at you. So you just need to work on it. And I love comedy, but I don't know. Nobody sees me as a funny guy, maybe, apparently. So that's what
No. But you know what? I think this, just in the first few minutes of this interview, we have told the world that there is this other side to you, you know, because you come out just darling. Certainly not as a killer.
Oh, thank you. I'm like a little kid. I can't wait to do some comedy. I can't wait to work on that. And I just did a sketch on Funny or Die, which hasn't been aired yet. It's not out yet, and it was funny. It will be good. You will enjoy it.
I want to see that. But you know, the other thing is, what about leading man, handsome as you are?
Oh, God bless you. From your mouth to God's ear. Let's see what's going to happen.
No, seriously, I don't get that. I mean, you know, I think that somebody ought to be putting you out there as the leading good man. So let's talk Abu Nazir. Listen to me. I wasn't the one. My guys in my tech room, as I told you earlier, they were all up partying last night. But I wasn't, and I sound like I was. But Abu Nazir on Showtime's Remarkable Drama. I mean,
yes.
That Homeland character. It's fair to say that he was based on Osama bin Laden, right? So no humor there. I mean, right? Is that how you thought of him when you were creating that character?
No. Yes and no. When they gave me the bio, I was kind of like a short two paragraphs. And I took that, and there are lots of different personalities out on the net that you can study them. So I started playing on the internet. I'm sure that the CIA was all over my internet connection, clicking all the different words that you shouldn't be clicking.
I get that.
But,
I get that.
But that was to me truly when we talked to Alex Ganza and Howard Gordon on the first meeting, we decided that. He's just a man. I mean, just playing him as a man. I didn't want to create a caricature. I wanted to create a man who is being put and who is being cornered, who is being put in the situations, and he's just reacting to those situations. And I hope that I was able to show the side that not very often we get to see. And I don't know. It's up to you guys to decide what it was.
Well, I think that obviously what you did was you created this unbelievably well-rounded character. We'll talk about that in a second. But when they offered you the role, I have to ask you, because, you know, we live in this wackadoo world. You know, you are Iranian-American. Did you hesitate at all? Did you worry also just about, you know, the forces that be coming at you for taking on this role? I mean, that I'm sure you must have thought about that. Tell me.
I thought about it, and actually I had people who they were advising me not to take the part. But when I read the script, I saw the potential in the story. I saw the journey of the character just on the pilot, even though that the character had only two lines. But when I read it, the style of the writing, it was very brave. It was something different, something that I hadn't seen before. And that kind of got my attention. And I said, okay, this is different. And when I went into the room and I talked to the guys, and I saw the way that they were approaching the character, I said, okay, this is good. This is something that we have never done before. And I didn't think twice about it. I mean, I don't have a problem. To me, when I'm playing my characters, you're not playing the... If you're playing a villain, you're not playing a villain. The villain is from the audience's point of view because they are taking sides. As an actor, when you're creating the character always looks at himself as a hero. So just staying truthful and not judging the character, I think that was the key.
That's really an interesting thing. Let me embellish that a little bit, because this character, he was different. He is different than most villains. I mean, you created somebody that was not that comic strip image, you know, that single dimension that so many villains are. I mean, going back from, we did a show yesterday on silent films, and you look at those, they're the model for how most people play villains, you know, when you're the bad guy. But you created this dimensional guy. He was dynamic, diverse. I want to know what the key was. What was the one? I mean, every actor. I ask a lot of actors this, but was there one key thing about this Abu Nazir that you used that got you there, that opened up the well so that you got the dimension? Well, and if there was, what was it?
There were two things. One of them that was very, very important to me. I would close my eyes and I would see this guy wearing glasses. And to find those particular glasses, I went for search. I went to almost every store in Charlotte. I was sure that even my custom designers, they were saying, okay, you have seen everything. I said, yeah, but this is not the guy. This is not the guy. I can't see the guy. And when I took those pair of glasses and I wore them, I said, okay. I looked in the mirror and I didn't see myself anymore. I said, okay, this is the guy. This is the facade of the guy. This is the outside. And I was struggling. I was trying to play him. I didn't want to play the outside. I wanted to play the inside of the guy from inside out. And at the end of the pilot, first episode, which we shot it, that was the first day that I was shooting with Damien, I think. When Brody is beating Walker and he's breaking down, and Abu's standing above his head and he's pointing a gun at him and said, just hit him harder, hit him harder. And the moment that he broke down, instinctively, I took him in my arms and I put his head on my shoulder and I started cradling him like a baby. And at that moment, I think Abu was born. At that split second, it was just something. It was the rage. It was a mixture of rage and love mixed together. And it was I never forget that moment. It was so powerful. And that shaped Abu for me.
Wow, interesting. He was also sexy and intriguing, dangerous and elegant. Is that you?
I don't know. I have to ask you.
No, I'm asking you. What do I listen? I'm in love. You're in Abu Dhabi, and I'm here, and I am now in love. I'm just the voice is killing me, buddy. So I mean,
thank you so much.
And the charm comes all the way across, you know, the internet wires. But I do think, you know, I'm laughing about that, but I say that because I do think that's what's so amazing, not just about Abu Nazir, but, you know, we were talking about, you know, I don't know if you know who Ted Bundy was, but he was a serial killer in America who just drove people crazy. And everybody,
wasn't that with all the women and all the things?
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And everybody loved him. I mean, you know, he was psychotic, I guess, you know, a psychopath. But that's the thing, because he, at the same time that he knew he was dangerous, you were as drawn to him as a fly is to fly paper. And I think that's the truth about this character that you created. And so, you know, and it seems to me that must be inside the man, or you couldn't find those things to create it.
Thank you so much. Maybe somewhere down there, something I don't know.
No, when I'm in L.A. next, you live in L.A., I'm coming out to see you. What can I tell you? So you
honey,
mentioned Damien.
Coffee on me, anytime. Let's go.
I think I'm flirting on there. Damien Lewis, Claire Danes, Mandy Patinkin. I mean, tell me about them. First of all, I think that there's a bromance was going on between you and Damien, as they say. Tell me about working with these iconic actors and what that was about. That must have been amazing.
It was fantastic. And see, one of the things that it was about this show was that everybody who came on board, they saw the value of the project. They saw how, you know, we were all excited because we were, at least from my point of view, I think all of us were excited because we were working on something so fresh, something that hasn't been done before. And working with those guys, I mean, I remember hanging out with Mandy Patinkin in Israel, and he is showing me Israel from his point of view, and traveling through the cities, and he is showing me the things that have changed, all the changes. It was an education. It was an education, and then with Damien, it was kind of funny. He kind of became like my brother. I mean, the connection, it became so strong for me that it was so that we both, nobody wanted to steal the spotlight. All of us, we were trying to support each other to shine, because I think we know that there's no way that I'm going to be able to shine unless my scene partner or the person who's in my scene and get the bright light shining on him, so the reflection of that light will shine on me. So I think all of us, we worked in as a team, and that was the key. And with Claire, oh my gosh, it was magnificent. When I did the episode that we are in the warehouse, and we blocked it, we run it once, and then we said, okay, we don't want to rehearse it anymore. We just want to go for it. Let's see what we get. And then it was so, that girl, my gosh, I was so impressed, especially that was when she was pregnant, and she was going through all these ups and downs, just emotional roller coaster. And at the same time, the moment that she walks off the set, she's kind of like a very completely opposite of what you see on the screen. So calm. She's looking around, very strong, very, very sure of herself. And she's kind of taking care of everyone. And David Harwood. David, when he came to take this job, he came from London. And he, I remember the first day that I saw him, he came with his British accent, such a heavy accent. I said, I don't know if I can do it. I don't know if I can do the accent. And then now you see, it's magnificent. He did a fantastic job. So the whole team was very, very good. I mean, everybody. I think it started all the way from the top, because everybody was appreciating the project and everybody was so generous with what they were giving. Therefore, everybody else was inspired to work that hard. The crew, fantastic crew, amazing.
I think that's what you can feel that when you watch the show. You can feel that here's what I would say. It's kind of like a in out give take. You feel the connection and you feel the withdrawal as the character wants you to withdraw and then back in. That's the tension that so makes this show what it is and what you actors were able to do. I got to ask you a question. In that warehouse scene, when she's so pregnant at that point, aren't you worried? Aren't you? I mean, you're a guy. I mean, it's like, oh, it's your need is to protect, and then you're running after her and tying her up, and oh my God, what was that? That must have been hard for you.
It was a little bit, and some of the scenes we had to. It wasn't just when I was running after her. I wasn't running I don't know how I can explain it. See, it was a mixture of Abu and Naveed both together. The actor who's working with his scene partner with the other actor, and at the same time is the character. Even the character, the way that he was caring about the character is the thing is that the connection, the journey of the whole group, the whole team, it created such a bond that we are running. I'm running after her, and then I said, okay, guys, are we done? Can we just finish it? Just one take. Well, why are we going 10 takes? Let's just finish it. And I was a little bit concerned, but she was fantastic.
A trooper. She's a trooper. No doubt about it. Listen, you've been around the biz for a while. I mean, you've built up quite a resume. The Stoning of Saroya M, which is set in 1986, Iran, unbelievable film. Supporting roles in Brothers with Tobey Maguire, Charlie Wilson's War opposite Tom Hanks, and directed by Mike Nichols. And you've had recurring roles in all sorts of, season 24 and the final season of 24, and what guest appearances, Lost, CSI, Miami, blah, blah. But Abu Nazir was your breakout role. And it's interesting. Why? Do you think why? Because some of those other roles you did some nice work on.
Thanks, I believe.
Timing? You think it's timing? You think?
It was timing. It was the writers. We had a fantastic team of writers who, I would have never been able to be Abu Nazir if it wasn't because of the scripts that I was given. And they did a fantastic job. I have to, I mean, Henry Bermel, Henry who passed away, he was so precious. He would come and spend time. He would sit down and he'd go over every detail. He wanted to be so fair and go over every detail. The whole team, they were fantastic. And the timing was there, and at the same time, the character was the character that everybody, it was an unknown character. It wasn't a remake of something else. The character was so original.
Mm-hmm.
And
right.
At the same time, the character opened the window so you could look through the window and see the other side and then see how similar you are to the other side. And I think that's what made Abu a household name. And everybody knows who Abu is. Trust me, some people, they don't know my name, but they call me Abu. So I walk around, this is what I'm getting.
People
even
shout
here,
out, hey, Abu.
I'm serious. Even here in Abu Dhabi, they call me Abu. Hey, Abu. I said, okay, hello.
So unbelievable. So let me ask you before I go further, because I don't want to give anything away, but it's played, the first two seasons have played just about all the way around the world now, right? So, I mean, everybody knows what happened, right? Everybody's pretty caught up on it. So it's before I even go there, I didn't want to go there yet, but I'm going to go there. But he's gone at the moment. So, first of all, any chance that they're going to bring him back, at least in flashbacks? And secondly, and probably more importantly, hey, letting go of somebody like that, that you know you have created the perfect character, that's got to be wrenching.
Okay, now it was a complex question. Let me answer a complex question.
Hey, it's early in the morning here. What time is it there? You got a whole day ahead of me.
Yeah. Okay, let me go get some Kleenex and then come back and talk to you. Now, I agree.
We're dangerous.
Yeah. Yes, that's exactly. The character being gone is truly to the storyline. I believe the character did what he was supposed to do. He came in, he played strong, and he went when he was on the top. He achieved his goal by saying what he wanted to say. And that was fantastic. That was great. At the same time, what had happened to me, some people, they ask me, oh, are you sad that you're not on the show? Is it bad? Is it this? Oh, it's so bad that you're not. I said, no, it's not about that. I love the journey of the character. I love what happened to the character. What I'm sad about is sometimes you go, for example, and you go to a 6-star restaurant, and you order steak, and you eat that steak, it melts in your mouth like a butter. Then you come out, and now you are in the search of the same steak. You're going to a different restaurant. You have Burger King, you have McDonald's, you have this, you have that. You know, okay, I'm hungry, but, you know, I tasted something delicious. So now you're in search of something like that or something better, which I'm satisfied. It made me look at the characters, at the projects differently. So I see that it exists. I know that it exists out there, and I think that's every actor's dilemma, or is my dilemma. Am I going to be able to find another character as complex as that would challenge me? It would make me dig in to find something. And I think that's it.
Out of all the roles that you've played, he is your favorite then, right? I mean, because you've had some decent roles along the way. Maybe it was the fact that he was part of such, he was such a huge role in terms of the script that you were working with on that. But that's right. So I know letting go. Go ahead.
No, it's just good. I love the challenge. You know, it was such a fine line. The character didn't have that many lines. There were just some words. And each of those words, we were laughing one day. I was sitting and they were talking about it. And I said, each word has to have a meaning of a book. So you have to be very precise how you say it, how you play it. It needs to be truthful. It needs to be honest. There is no, you cannot manipulate the dialogue. I mean, as an actor, I cannot come in and manipulate it. I have to be truthful to the subtext and truthful to the core of what that word means. And there were a couple of those lines that they were even, I have a favorite line that comes, you don't have to kill a man to kill an idea. And that line, it was so deep. I sat down and thought about that line. I said, oh my gosh, that's true. This is, I don't know. I'm going somewhere else. And somewhere else. I'm so sorry. See what you're doing to me, Hallie?
Keep going. Because, hey, guys, look at this. So he's not just another pretty face. Even though I understand, by the way, that you did start as a model along the way. Yes? You've done some modeling.
A long time ago.
Well, you know, not bad. So he's not just another pretty face, and that's good to. So all right. So let's go down this road a little bit. What makes Navid tick? What gets you excited in life outside of showbiz?
Life outside of showbiz.
Is there life outside of showbiz? Or are you a workaholic?
I am workaholic, and I'm a daydreamer. I love, I close my eyes, I visualize things, and sometimes my dreams, they come true, but I see them before it happens. I truly see them, and then down the road, that's exactly what happens. I mean, I see places that I'm going, and then I'm standing in the middle of that place, and I say, oh my gosh, I've been here before.
Deja vu.
And I don't know. Maybe I love people. I love people watching. I love getting to know people. I mean, and when I'm, I don't know. I don't want to sound very creepy, but I walk around and sometimes if I find an interesting person who's walking around. And the way that they're dealing with each other, with someone else, then I just sit and I just watch them. Those are my teachers. Those are the people who are going to teach me how to move forward. It's just, I don't know, there are messages in all those gestures, the things that's happening to you. And I'm the crazy guy who's sitting and trying to decipher. Sometimes I think I'm mad, but I don't know. Maybe I am.
hardly at all. No. But I get that. I understand what you're saying.
You go to the bus stop. You sit there. You see how the homeless guy is treating the other homeless guy. How this person is treating that person. The world is fascinating to me, and the way that the people are treating each other is amazing. It's beautiful.
What's your perfect day for you? Give us a perfect day for Navid Negaban.
A perfect day. And a perfect day is when I can't sleep until noon, which has never happened. But no, it's a perfect day.
Sounds good. What's that like?
Oh, it doesn't happen that often.
I hear you.
I've been here no sleep. a perfect day of getting up, having my tea, and just pick up a book, script, just glance through it, check the internet, check the web, see what's going on out there in the world. Check the, I don't know, the projects, the news, the projects that they're coming up. Then sometimes I live close to the park. Sometimes I just go and sit on the bench, have my coffee, and watching the people. I mean, very zoned out, very that's what it is. But my everyday life is just getting out at 6:37 o'clock, trying to check the trades, the industry, what's happening, what's going on, trying to find the next project, reading the scripts, helping friends to put their projects together, and just, I don't know. That's what.
Are you a loner or a people person?
Both. I love people, but I love to listen to the voice inside me.
Oh, what
and,
a way, nice way to put that.
I,
that's a lovely way to put it. You're a poet, too.
Oh, thank you. I don't think I should keep my day, though, I think.
No, but I can hear it in your voice. I can hear it in your in what you say. Iran, miss it?
A lot.
Hard to leave the country, huh? Hard to leave your native world.
It is. And it was, I never forget when I left, my dad told me, you're going to be back in 6 months. And, well, he was still waiting for 6 months to be over.
Are you near your computer? Because we're getting feedback. Move away if you're near a computer.
Am I okay?
No, that's better. Yeah, there you go.
So that's what I'm saying. I miss it. I miss the family, and but
did you go back?
I'm very selfish because I wouldn't have been myself if I didn't do what I'm doing. And I think all of us, we are responsible. We are. There's a gift that has been given to us, and that gift is what's inside us, the soul, whatever we have, whatever you want to call it. And that, if you don't stay truthful to that, you're wasting the gift that has been given to you. And I believe that everybody is responsible to cherish the gift and carry it and allow it to grow. And you never know where it's going to go. And just a journey. Just
well, life
a journey.
Is a journey, that's for sure. Can you go back? You can go back to Iran, and you do go back, or you don't?
I think so. I don't know. I haven't been back since 2005, and I haven't been back, so I don't know if I can go back and come up. I think I should be. I don't know. I don't know. It's one of those questions that you have to try it to answer it. You have to go there and then see if you can.
And then whether they let you in or not. I'm going to ask you a question. I'm sure you'll get where I'm going. I've been doing nothing but asking you questions. But this one I wanted to know. Americans are crazy right now. You know, we're all on a high wire act. You know, freaked out from 9/11, you know, from all the craziness, from, you know, everybody's got always looking over their shoulder kind of thing. You know, and I'm wondering whether when people see you or meet you, and I've never asked anybody this question, do they look at you askance because you have that Middle Eastern look? You know, some may know you're Iranian. Have you run across that?
I've
never asked anybody that. I've always wanted to ask somebody that question.
No, it, at the beginning, yes, at the beginning, especially closer when it was closer to 9/11. But later on, I think that people, they start to open their eyes, they start to seeing the difference in the regions or the belief system. And I've had people that approach me like that, but to me, I don't know, it's funny. I don't get offended. When somebody comes and talks to me in that tone, I don't get offended because it's not, I didn't do anything wrong. It's because that person, person lack of knowledge, or maybe that person is ignorant. So actually I feel bad and I try to open up to them and I try to say, okay, you know, this is what's going on, this is what we are, this is where we are, this is who I am, this is where I came from. So you see and you tell them a story, you tell them exactly who you are, and then they see you for who you are. You know, the problem that we have is that we look at people with preconceived notions and we look at people, we see what we have been told that we should be seeing is the media, the news channels, everything that's happening around, the images that are being shown, even Hollywood, even our industry. Sometimes the projects that you're putting out there, the things that you're showing is and might be a little bit sensitive. It might be a little bit irresponsible because we don't know how powerful our images are. The images that you're showing, these images are what's going to create someone's mindset. I grew up in Iran. I have pictures. I'm 3 years old. I'm dressed in a cowboy outfit with my hat, and I have my six-shooter next to my mouth, and I'm blowing into my six-shooter. And I have that picture.
Oh my
God. I can send it to you.
I want to see that.
I will send it to you, no problem. And this is how I grew up. So you see, we are going back so long, and James West was my idol. Wild, Wild West, James West.
I know that shit, right.
All my shoes, all my heels, the heels of my shoes, all of them, they had a hole in it. Because I wanted to be James West, who can twist his heel and have something hidden in it. So he... Oh, no, my gosh. I told you this. Now, next time when I'm flying, they're going to check my heels, the heels of my shoes. See, you're getting me in trouble. I'm giving you all my secrets. My gosh.
You're such a character. You really are. You know that? Oh, my God. I love it. But let's get serious again. Here we'll go. Is it tough to get producers to see past the image of Abu Nazir now?
A little bit, yes. But I just finished a project with Fred Skipsey, who directed the film is Words and Pictures. And it was with Clive Owen, Juliette Binoche, you know, oh my gosh, bunch of fantastic actors, Amy Brennerman, Bruce Davison, everybody was in that film. And I'm sure that I'm missing some names. But I played the headmaster of a prep school. And
you?
There's
interesting casting.
I loved it. And what Fred told me when he came down to LA, we had a meeting, lunch, he said, I've seen the growth in you. I've seen your work, and I've been watching your work. And I think this is something, it's time for you to play something like this. And I was amazing. I mean, I worked with him, and I loved this guy. It was a great, great pleasure working with him.
When does that come out?
So,
Words and Pictures.
Probably it's going to come out next year. And I think they're pushing it for a festival. I'm not sure if they're going to be able to get it to Toronto. I don't know what's going to happen.
Hmm.
But it will come out soon. I'm very excited about that project.
And so that is something different. And you got Skepsi to see you as something different. That's so you're on your way out of out of the trap of Abu Nazir.
No, the indie world. They don't hesitate. The industry, the Hollywood industry, sometimes there are people who are they've been very kind to me. They are interested, even they were trying to generate something. I've had a couple showrunners who were very very kind to me. I mean, they even they had a chat with me. They sat down. They said, what do you want to play? What is it that you want to play? And we went down the list. But I think, I don't know. I don't know what. Right now I'm in Abu Dhabi. I don't know where I'm going to be tomorrow. So I live it just day by day, the present. The present is what counts.
That's true. That's for sure, because who knows where what comes tomorrow, right? And so you've got that thing. You've got, well, you know, every actor I've ever known has either the gypsy in them, which is they're moving around all the time. But you also live with the idea that you never know where your next project is coming from. And that's okay, right?
That's okay.
It's the not knowing maybe that gets you excited.
And I try. It's not not knowing. The thing is that I never stop searching. And I never stop creating. Even if I'm not working in front of the camera, I try to do something just to satisfy myself. I mean, I would. Oh my gosh, the day I was thinking the day that I'm not able to create something new, I think I'm done. And I still have lots of new things that I can say. There are projects. I'm working on a play. I'm trying to put a play together in Los Angeles, which I really love. It's the name of the play is Know Your Enemy, and Randy Feldman wrote it. And a beautiful story about these three characters who have been blinded and they don't see each other. They don't see anybody except themselves and how they're being put together and how they start seeing the world through the other person's point of view. And I really like this project. So let's see what's going to happen.
That sounds absolutely fascinating. So
let's see what's going to happen.
Last question about Ahmed Nazir. What did he teach you?
What did he teach me? Then he taught me not being judgmental, seeing the good in people, which I knew. It just that was one of the things. Because he was always in search of one person, in search of a messenger. And in reality, when you look at it, go through the story, when you watch it, you will see that he doesn't need anybody to do his things for him. But at the same time, the entire time, he is putting his faith in someone else's hands. And he's trying to find the one person who is truthful. He's trying to find that truthful person at the same time that he's doing his own thing, but he's in search of that. That's what's happening.
So is that your quest, to find the one truthful person?
I think I've been always searching for that one truthful person, the person that who really, truly, genuinely is what the person says is what the person means, and what the person means is what the person says. I live my life like that. I mean, there is a saying that I fell in love with called, that says, you will see the truth when you are blind, and you will hear the truth when you are deaf. And I've been trying to live my life like that. Let's see.
I never heard that before.
Let's see what's going to happen. I don't know where I read it years ago. And
I got to find out who said that's a great line. Oh, my gosh.
That's it.
That is key, isn't it? That's the bottom line.
Yeah.
That's it. You're going to find it. I'll bet you probably. Yeah, you know, the sad thing would be is when we find it and we miss it. That would be a bad thing. So, Emmy talk, buddy. Yes.
Well, I'm too far away. I'm too far away to listen to those talks. I don't know. What is the talk?
Oh, come on. There's nobody in the business who isn't talking about giving you the Emmy for that role. Oh, my God. It's like he did it. He did it. I mean, he did. He did the performance of all performances. If you don't get it, it's politics.
God bless you.
God bless you.
Just people thinking of that. That's a pleasure, and that's good. So you never know what's going to happen.
You, buddy, are far more than I ever thought I was going to meet on the Internet through the Hallie Kasser Jane Show. Thank you for being my guest. You are a trip. You are wonderful.
Thank you.
The man, Navid Negibon, what an actor. What a charming guy. He's not just a pretty face. Good luck to you, buddy. Hope we'll speak again.
Thank you so much, Lo. Thanks.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Aging can bring about many issues for the ones we love. Is someone you love living with frequent pain? Are they spending more time just sitting in a chair or lying in bed? Are they going to the ER more often? Other than taking them to the doctor, it can be difficult figuring out what else to do. Treasure Coast Hospice can help in more ways than you may realize. Even if you don't think your loved one is ready for hospice care, Treasure Coast Hospice can answer your questions and discuss your concerns. Their team of experts can evaluate your loved one's condition and direct you to the right resources in our community who may be able to assist you. If your loved one can benefit from hospice care, you won't find a more experienced team to help them live more comfortably and support your entire family in making your time together more meaningful. You don't have to face this alone. Call Treasure Coast Hospice today to see how they can help or learn more at tchospice.org.
Well, I hope you guys enjoyed my conversation with Navid Negibon. I surely did. What a guy. What a forthcoming person. It's always nice to work with somebody like that. Before I go, I want to remind everyone that our podcasts of current and past shows are always available to listen to free on iTunes under The Hallie Kasser Jane Show. You can also listen to us on the mobile site, mblogtalkradio.com. And now, The Hallie Kasser Jane Show is also available via Stitcher, the award-winning mobile app that lets you listen to the show on demand anytime, anywhere, even without Wi-Fi or a cell connection. And you can even connect with your Facebook account and comment on our episodes. We're always excited to see what you have to say. Download the Stitcher app today for your iPhone, Android, and most tablets from Stitcher.com. And, of course, we are always available on HallieKasserJane.com, which I hope you'll visit often. It's where we post all the latest information on our upcoming shows. Oh, and by the way, while you're at HallieKasserJane.com, don't forget to visit my blog to read my latest musings. We will be back next week, same time, 3 p.m. Eastern, for another edition of the Hallie Kasser Jane Show Talk Radio for Fine Minds, brought to you by Treasure Coast Hospice at tchospice.org. And by the way, please don't forget, do visit our partners at booktrib.com, where you can browse, read, share, and win. Stay in touch. Remember, that's HallieKasserJane.com, on Facebook at HallieKasserJane, and on Twitter at HallieCJ. I really do love to hear from you. And as always, I would like to thank our music director, Tony Rosales. Please visit Tony at TonyRosalesJazz.com. Hey, Tony, you going to play us out now? I hope so. You have been listening to The Hallie Kasser Jane Show, talk radio for fine minds. Join us again next week. We're live every Wednesday right here on Blog Talk Radio at 3 p.m. Eastern. So, till we meet again, this is Hallie Kasser Jane. It's a wrap.